the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. It's hour three on this Monday. Little tough to be completely, completely in the usual Monday spirit that we typically enjoy. All the congratulations and the discussions of success, but that's what keeps you going is the next opportunity or the next horse and. In this case, the next conversation, this time Phil Gleaves, after a really good week that started on Tuesday with Thin White Duke winning at Finger Lakes, winning the aspirant for Steve Crist and for Phil and Ken DeGrette and Brian Hilliard. And then yesterday, on the back end of the week, here was the Futurity win. And happy to get Phil Gleaves in to talk about the success yesterday. And 2nd of July, the Jack Milton that is a homebred for Brian Hilliard. Phil, congratulations.
Good morning, Steve, and thank you. So great to be on with you.
Well, this was, it's funny because I reached Steve when Thin White Duke won the was at the Funny Side, and
yep.
I had to get Steve on first, and so this is perfect because it's the opportunity to get your side of things, and you managed to even parlay the success and. Let's talk about yesterday, and then we'll fold in Thin White Duke and give us a little bit of the background on the son of Jack Milton, and this opportunity, Dylan Davis bringing him home in the Futurity.
Yeah, it's a very cool story. Brian Hilliard, I've trained for him for 25 years. Super nice guy, great owner. And he owned Swamp Rat. That was probably his best horse to date before this particular gelding. And, broke him last winter in Ocala at Vexo Racing Stables, and which is where I spend my winters breaking horses for Mr. Vegso and bringing my other horses down there to run off the farm. And he was one of them that we broke, and he didn't stand out by in any way, but we got up here to Saratoga. He was doing well, and obviously being by Jack Milton, it was a no-brainer to go right to the grass with him, and I did that. He had not breezed on the grass, and he lit up the board, first time out, $138. there were some highly touted horses in that race, which is why he was such a big price. And then, of course, we had to come back. As long as he was doing good, which he was, the obvious choice was to come back in the Futurity and test his class.
He passes. talk about the trip a little bit. I know that there's a lot of people licking their wounds, saying, if we had gotten through and this and that, but that's not the way. That they don't take the picture of the horse that had the bad trip.
Well, that happens to everybody. It's happened to me as well. I've had some tough beats in my life as well. So that stuff happens. We would just happen to have a very good trip yesterday. Dylan is riding better than ever and as good as anyone. And he saved ground as much as he could. He sat on the horse looking for a way to get through and then pulled him out. And then after that, he wore those horses down. And I like the way he finished.
Agreed, and he was, he was still running at the end. I mean, the best part of his performance came, in the late stages, which bodes well. And this is a fun story. I can tell you who else was excited by this performance was Gary Barber, who has the majority interest in Jack Milton.
there you go. And Jack Milton was a good horse in his own right. I think his biggest win was the Maker's Mark Mile. So you'd think that distance would not be a problem for 2nd of July. Of course, we're sprinting again in his next start, but at some point we will stretch him out.
The next start, of course, this is a win and you're in opportunity for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Sprint. And, talk about what that means to you.
Well, that's very exciting. You know, obviously, if the horse is doing well, then we want to do that. We want to go to the Breeders' Cup with him. I haven't been back there in quite a while. I've been there 3 times before, but I haven't been back there in a while. And it feels great. It feels very satisfying to have a horse that can get me back to those kinds of races.
I'm curious, do we know the backstory of the name, of the second of July?
Yes, we do. So Brian Hilliard, the owner, has a son whose name is Reed, R-E-D, and that's his birth date.
I love it.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah,
nice.
He's a good family man and wanted to name name one for his kids and has done. He had one before named Isabel's Joy after his daughter, and he's had one called Reed's Run. And so, as you can tell, he's a strong family man and wanted to name a horse accordingly.
I love it. Well, and you also, actually, in addition, we should also mention that not only did 2nd of July come across yesterday in the Futurity, but there was also Yes and Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and, he ran a super race yesterday, his first real try going a distance of ground, or middle distance anyway, and I was very proud of the way he ran. I think he can benefit and move forward from that condition-wise, and I was very happy the way Dylan rode him. He got to the lead, slowed the pace down to a half and 50, which is not easy to do on that particular horse because he can get a little bit rank, and also not easy to do in the New York Jockeys Colony. So, getting back to Dylan, I think he's riding better than ever and as good as anybody.
Well, this was a good allowance try and beating a length. You also mentioned how the week more or less started with Thin White Duke. Let's fold him in, and I should mention that's also a horse that you bred, and this is part of the reason I'm bringing it up is the sibling angle here. How many mares are you covering a year?
We only had one mare, and unfortunately we had to euthanize her last year due to an injury. She was getting older, but we only had one mare, my wife and I, but every horse that she has foaled has won, and two of them have been stakes winners, and one has been stakes placed, and of course there's Yes and Yes, and a horse called Now Is, and we've had some rough luck over the last year with some of her offspring, but Thin White Duke is making up for it.
It's amazing, and Miami Cat was out of this mare.
That was the first one. After we acquired the mare, she was in foal to Miami Cat, and that was the first one that we owned. And he was a listed stakes winner here in Saratoga, real nice horse. And each one has been good. And
amazing.
We're hoping that Thin White Duke turns out to be the best.
How about that? Is that filly? There's a yearling filly, right? Our Abbey Road.
Well, unfortunately, there isn't. You know, we had to euthanize her. That poor little girl, a couple of months ago, had a hernia surgery, and she did not come through it, and she had to be euthanized in the clinic, which was a tough blow because she was a Freud, she was a New York bred, and she was the last of the line. And from Aberdeen Alley, and we were hoping that she would take her place as a broodmare, but it was not meant to be. So, we don't like to look back, we look forward, that's where we're at right now.
Oh, boy, that's tough.
It's a tough game, as you well know, and as your listeners well know. This is, as Leroy Jolly said, this is not a game for people in short pants. This game will bring you to your knees. You know, so when you have something that happens like yesterday or Thin White Duke in the Stick of Finger Lakes, I have a real, real sense of gratitude.
Now, I certainly know that storyline. I mean, we've lost babies. I mean, not so much, you know, older horses. We've had bad luck with foals, with the Rhodococcus and the like, and it, you know, you put so much emotional. There's so much emotional.
Well, they become part of your family when you're breeding them. They really do. You see them every day, and they become part of your family. And it's tough when you lose one for anybody.
Let's flesh out where things are with Thin White Duke coming back with the win in the aspirant, and I guess you know, putting a win streak together with him makes up for those narrow losses before he broke his maiden.
Yeah, we had some tough beats up here. We in the two grass races prior to the Funny Side, you know, we just got nailed on the wire, and we were second to a good filly of Christoph's that beat us the time before that. So they were, you know, he had a rough trip that day. But then we took him back off the pace in the Funny Side, knowing there was a lot of speed in the race, and Joel rode him very, very well and got him to the outside and won that. And then, of course, we went to Finger Lakes. We were entered in the Bongard at Belmont, and then we'd kept him nominated for the and I was corrected here, it's called the Aspirant. I've called it the Aspirant for 35 years, but I was corrected, and apparently it's pronounced Aspirant.
Which I guess makes sense, Aspire, Aspire.
Right.
All right.
So, we went to Finger Lakes, and due to the COVID situation, I could go, but I couldn't. I would have to quarantine coming back here, even though it's within state. There was a narrow rule. So I sent him up the day before to a buddy of mine, Bobby Atanasio, who used to ride for me 30 years ago at Belmont, and he trains up in Finger Lakes. And so I sent him up there the afternoon before the race, and we got the job done up there, which was great.
You obviously, when you're dealing with the state bred program, you get, you know, the opportunity for these, you know, and you've got to be nominated, both the aspirant and the lady finger. They're like a futurity system where, you know, you pay, and that's why the purse gets to what it is. And it always makes me laugh because it's always, you know, an uneven, you know, some random uneven number around 125,000. So taking advantage of these spots and, you know, I mean, running, you know, nice numbers for a New York bred two-year-old at this time of year.
Yeah, and you're right. These futurity types of races, there are initial nominations when the horses are foals, and then there are sustaining payments at different periods of a horse's growth. And so all of those fees are thrown into the purse with the added money from the racetrack. In that case, for the aspirant, the added money was 70, but with all the fees, it became 120. And now the next one, which is the futurity on the 26th of this month, they're expecting that purse to be right around 200. So that's something that we've got to give a lot of consideration towards going back up there for. It's 2 days after the Sleepy Hollow. And we have nominated, and we will enter in the Sleepy Hollow. But it's kind of like a similar situation to last time. We'll enter in both races, and then we'll put our heads together. I'm very lucky in having a mastermind in my ownership group, Mr. Christ, who can suss out competition like nobody else I know. You know, we'll make a collective decision as to which way to go with the Duke.
Nice. And again, that just shows you, you know, the wealth of opportunities with the, you got the state bred programs, you got the sire series.
Oh, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. The Breeders Awards, the Owners Awards. It's just, it's simply the best state bred program in the country.
Now, and you know, for you, obviously, Phil, you're dealing with, you know, a situation where I'm seeing how often, you know, your name is included in the ownership side, and you know, you're not starting, you know, dozens and dozens of horses, but you know, feels like you've really hit on a nice formula with a, you know, with a set of close ownership, and you know, either making it happen yourself, or you know, picking up some horses that, you know, that can make, you know, basically, you know, make their way.
Yes. 3 years ago when I turned 60, I told my wife I wanted to do things a little bit differently, and I was offered a job to go to Ocala to break yearlings and become a private farm trainer for Mr. Vegso, one of my longtime clients. And I decided at that point, because our son was going off to college, that it was a good opportunity to try. And so we moved to Ocala, and we fell in love with Ocala. But part of the situation, the deal was, I told Mr. Vegso that I would do it as long as I could have my summer months off to go to Saratoga, because I wanted to keep fulfilling my competitive juices. And so 3 years ago I did that, and I've only brought a handful of horses up by design. We only have had 8 horses each year. And so I just try to pick ones that will fit. I break all the horses myself. And I love getting involved in the breeding and certainly the ownership of the horses. I really, you know, for a small trainer, to make money is extremely difficult. And the only way that you can is by putting your own money up and getting an owner's piece of the pie, as opposed to just the trainers.
Yeah, it you know, it's a reality that you know, we're seeing plenty of. Right? Let's put it that way. I mean, if you're of a certain size, and you know, if you don't have that major conduit, you know, it. We've talked about this, Phil. I mean, over the years too. It's, you know, the dynamics have changed so much, and not, you know, I always qualify it by saying it's nothing against the big outfits, but the concentration of talent in too few hands is not healthy. It's not good for the entry box. It's not good for bettors. It's, you know, there's a lot of negatives. We can understand why it's happened, but it doesn't make it, you know, it doesn't make it advantageous.
Yeah, and I saw the writing on the wall a long time ago when the game started to go that way, and like I say, that just coincided with my turning 60. I've been doing this since I was 15 years old, working with racehorses. And you know, there comes a point in anyone's life, in anybody's business, where you just want to do something a little bit differently. And when I made the decision to do this, I was unsure of what would happen. But I just love having 8 horses. It's just great. It's wonderful. For me, not to have 30 horses or 40 horses or 70 at one point. I just, for my own personal well-being, for my own sanity, I like going into a barn and having 2 grooms and 2 riders and 6 of the 8 to go to the track on any given day.
No one would doubt your ability to, you know, get a horse ready and keep a horse good. For those that aren't as familiar, provide a little bit of that that background. I always let you and ask you for the backstory, because you've got about as great a resume as anybody does, as any horseman could have.
Well, I was very fortunate when I came to this country. I got a job right away as an exercise boy for Lucien Laurent, and I worked for him for several months, and he wasn't going to Florida for the winter, and I just left England and the cold, damp winters of England, and so a friend of mine had introduced me to Woody Stevens, who I didn't know or didn't know of, and so I was lucky to get a job right away with Woody, and we became very close, and I was galloping a lot of good horses for him over the years, too numerous to mention. But I spent 8 years with Woody and then went on my own as a trainer. And luckily, within the first month of training, I won a stake at Sportsman's Park. I was training privately for Frank Stronach. That was my first job as a trainer. So I won a stake at Sportsman's Park and had a good year that year with Frank, and then decided to go on my own, open a public stable that winter, and by fortune got a hold of a horse called Wise Times, and won the Travis with him and the Super Derby and the Haskell, and I feel that I've gotten the most out of horses that have been sent to me. And I don't think I've had the best horses sent to me, but I feel like I've gotten the most out of them. And we've won plenty of stakes and plenty of races. I have a strong conviction in my own abilities with a racehorse and always try to do the right thing.
It's Wise Times. We think about, conversations, over the last, I don't know, how many, it's a few. It's not that long ago with Chaba and.
Chaba and Mambo Meister.
Mambo Meister.
Yeah, we moved to Miami 20 years ago because my son Skylar was 3 years old and was about ready to of school age, and I need to pick a place to have him go to school year round. I didn't want him bouncing around from track to track. So I decided to stay in one place for the first time, and I chose Miami. So we spent 20 years in Miami, and like I say, we came up with a couple of good horses there, Chaba and Mambo Meister, as you mentioned. And then, like I say, it's been very satisfying for me, Steve, to get back to the big time. Not that doesn't in any way, shape, or I'm not trying to denigrate South Florida racing by any means. It's very competitive. Some very good horsemen down there and good horses. But I always felt in the back of my mind that, boy, wouldn't it be nice to get back to New York? And I did that, and I wanted to get back to my winning ways in New York. And fortunately, thank God, I've done that.
No doubt. I want to ask about one. I'm going to ask you about one other horse from the past that I don't remember if we've ever talked about. Evening Chris.
Evening Chris was a lovely horse. We for Due Process Stables. Mr. Brennan had purchased him privately, and from somebody, a trainer in Miami, and we got him. And we were fortunate enough to win the Jerome and the what's the other one there. I drank too much wine last night. I'm trying to think what the other race was. But he was a very nice horse for us. Won a couple of graded stakes for us in New York.
Yeah, and was the River Ridge? Was
yes, exactly right. It was the River Ridge.
Okay.
Yes,
there we go. Now the Woody Stevens, which was appropriate. And, you know, on that same topic, too, since you mentioned we bring up Woody, I think I always ask you this for those that don't realize what an array of talent. Tell everybody who was around the barn at that time.
Oh, you mean when I was working for Woody?
Yeah.
Oh, Devil's Bag, Swale, Danzig, Sabin, going back to White Star Line, Terpsichorus, Smart and Smart Angle. Boy, the list is endless.
Well, and what about personnel? Talk about the you know, the University of Woody.
It was great. Billy Badgett, David Dong, Sandy Bruno, who never went on her own, but a very good horsewoman in her own right. It was great, yeah. And, you know, Billy went on to a stellar career as a trainer, and David is still doing great.
It's always fun, and even people that, you know, there's even people that that are in and around the game in one way or another that were part of that. Denise Stampinato, who runs the Horseman's Bookkeep.
Whenever I go into the Horseman's Bookkeeper's office, we always talk about the old times. She galloped for Woody for a long time. Yeah.
She tells the story. She tells whether it was Woody or was it somebody else where she said she was getting to that age where it was either you're going to get off the racetrack or at least get off the out of the morning routine and maybe stay on the racetrack or not and like I think in her late 20s and so she made the transition. That made the transition, and she's done very nicely, and
yes, certainly
we all count on her. Phil, a really good week between the aspirant and the Futurity, and certainly from a historical standpoint, the Futurity, an important race. It's been refashioned as a turf sprint, but. It gets you to the Breeders' Cup, and that alone is good news. It's something that I was looking forward to having this conversation.
Thank you so much, Steve. Like I say, it's been very gratifying, and I'm very grateful for the opportunities that have come my way. And as everybody in all does, they do the best they can with what they have, and you hope for the best, and you treat your horses right, and your personnel right. And, I'm very proud of the fact that I'm doing this 35 years now. I've never had one positive test, not one ever, not even an overage of Butte, nothing. And I feel so proud of that.
The success that you fashion it's got to it's got to act as kind of inspiring for anybody. I mean, you don't have to have a barn full of horses. You just have to have a right one and the right ones.
Yeah,
Phil, look forward to seeing you at Caneland.
Great, my friend. Always a pleasure. I will look forward to seeing you when we get down the road.
Absolutely, Phil Gleaves with the pair of wins and two nice, one graded and one specialized, obviously restricted in New York, and the aspirant, and that makes sense, right? You're aspiring to,
I guess so.
Right?
I just always said it as an aspirant. I've been using that word for my whole life. I just assumed that's the way it was pronounced.
Exactly, I did as well. At a glance, but now, all right. So now. Now
if it comes up on Jeopardy, we will know the answer.
There you go. There we go. We can match wits. love it. Phil Gleaves. We'll stay right here, and we got about 20 minutes, and we're going to talk to Peter McFarland. And Peter, on Saturday, we built you up toward the Keeneland contest, and I was watching the leaderboard. And it's, especially late, it gets volatile. And, you sort of were expecting certain people at the top of the leaderboard that, you figure, okay, they're making their final bets. But something unexpected happened. And really, no sooner, had the dust settled, I got a bunch of texts from Jim Goodman. I got from North Carolina, Tony Montanino, who was on site, from Tommy Massis. And there was mayhem in the gold room. And Peter McFarland with a audacious bet wins it all. Peter, congratulations.
Hey, what's up, Steve? Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Tell me, well, I only know that whenever anything involves Tommy Masses, there's mayhem. But talk about how this all came off.
Well, you know, you start with the $2,000 bankroll, and I was playing tries all day long on it. I had gotten in this gamble / the Fall Classic, you know, every year that they've had it, Jim puts on, and I think one time I qualified for Vegas, I took like third. So this time I was like, I'm not doing any place show win, early on at least. So I was playing trifectas, not having a great day. I hit a few tries, but nothing substantial. So it was just, bankroll just kept dwindling down. Well, the second to last race, I had like $288 left in the account. So I put it on the one horse. I looked at the race, and I saw that Kentucky Down Stakes race where that one horse with Martin ran a nice race, got itself in trouble, ended up second to the horse that ran second Saturday. So I put that bankroll on that horse. He went off at like 7-2 or 4-1. So I had a little over $1,200 in the account after that race, and I was nowhere near the leaderboard. I was, you know, after the before the feature and then after the feature, I still wasn't anywhere near it. So I wasn't going home with that. And I talked to TVG yesterday, and I was just saying, I'm not, you know, you can cancel it out or you can just hold your bankroll. Well, that's not very fun. So I was up in the green room, and I was looking at the race, and I had just yelled out to a few of the people in the green room, hey, you guys like anything? I knew Tommy didn't have any money left, and I knew couple of the others, actually nobody else was even playing in the contest, so I was just asking, anybody like anything long here? I'm just going to put this bankroll on them. And Tommy had mentioned, hey, you know, the four horse here, it's a first-time starter and kind of fits, and I was looking at it, and I said, yeah. And Tommy had went out and visited that stallion the day before, and he had the stallion on his hat. And so I went back over to my table, I'm like, yeah, I kind of like the one as well. So I put $400 to win on the four horse, and I put maybe $300 or $400 on the one horse that was 10 or 15 to 1. And at Keeneland now, very few people attending. So I went out and I sat down in the grandstand there and watched the race. And I saw the four battling pretty hard, and I'm like, oh my God, thing's got a shot. And when it crossed the line first, I looked up at the odds board, and I'm like, 29-1. Holy cow, he floated up. He was like 15-1. He kept floating. And then I had a $3 try with him, too. I boxed like five horses in a trifecta box for $3. So I hit the account, and it showed 16,000, and the leaderboard wasn't up. So I was sitting there, and Misty, the lady that runs the door, she kept hitting the refresh button, and then it popped up first place. So it was pretty cool. It was real fun. It was real fun. So coming back from $200 to $280 to 16,000 in two races. And my wife asked me, she just hit me up at about 5 or 6 o'clock that night, you doing any good? I'm like, no.
and half an hour later.
Yeah. All of a sudden, I you know, get an entry into the BCBC and the NHC.
Well,
second time in the NHC.
Too much, and you, well, the NHC, of course, you know, you're gonna make plans for next summer. You got plenty of time for that. But
yeah,
the nice thing is, you know, to come right back and be ready, you know, first weekend there in November for Breeders' Cup. Some of the specifics here for those that, you know, that weren't watching, the Keeneland Nightcap was a 40,000 maiden claimer, and Critical Threat for Pocket Aces.
Critical Threat, yep.
And you bring up the fact that Tommy and Tony Montanino, they went out to TaylorMade on Friday.
And exactly right. He's like, this is a hat.
Mishawish Mishawish is the sire of Critical Threat, and Not This Time, the sire of Hillbilly. Well, Tony, on Friday night, Tina and I were driving somewhere, and Tony sends me he sends me pictures, and he didn't identify, which what stallions they saw during their visit to TaylorMade. And so then later on, when this happens after you win this, Tony sends me the note. He says, those were the horses I sent you, Mishawish, and Not This Time. You got to be kidding me. And they end up as the Exacta, which pays $197 for a buck, and Critical Threat was $61.60 to win. And so even when Tony Massis doesn't win at Keeneland, he wins.
Yeah, exactly. He's a good handicapper, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a horse in the green room yesterday that he liked at Woodbine that went off at 8 or 9 to 1 that won the 8 horse in one of the races. We all hit it pretty hard, but so I think he's heading back to Canada today.
Well, he said he wasn't going to let the fall go by without his trip to Keeneland. What about you? Give us a little bit of your background.
My background, I own some, I've got a nice little 3-year-old filly right now named Twitter Pated. She's by Stormy Atlantic, and her full sister won a grade one. She won, her full sister was Stormy Lucy. So
okay.
I dabble a little
sure.
bit in the horses. I've got half of her. I own her with a couple other guys. I've won a few races. I think I've won 7 or 8 times at Keeneland. I had, I don't know if you remember Turncoat. That was one of my horses.
Okay.
Ran in the Woodbine Mile. And then just a long-time horse player. I love the races, there's no doubt. I used to really like golfing, and my back isn't what it used to be, so now it's more Friday afternoon, go to the races or flip it on, play a pick five here and there. I did take down the pick five at Tampa in the spring. And that was the only ticket on a Monday. And that was one of my big scores this year. It was like 130,000. I took it down.
Nice.
I singled a horse in the first leg of a pick five, and then it just came up bombs after that. So pick five's my play.
Well, and with good reason, between the low takeout and mostly when you think about the denomination, talk about your contest history. You said one NHC try, but one qualification. What got you playing contests?
So, Keeneland and the spring and fall meets. Jim, years ago was doing the $100 contest where it was 2 to win in place, and that was like 20 years ago when I started to get into them. And then every time they did a gamble, I would get in. And then I've done the BCBC 4 or 5 times as well. The one I qualified in for the gamble a few years ago, I took 3rd, I think. And then in the NHC, I think I got up to as high as 10th or 11th place. I finished 60th, 61st, something like that. I hit the bowl. I cashed. But Sunday, I think that Sunday, I had like $186 going in, and I think I finished with like $195. Well, everything came off the turf, and this was 3 years ago. But looking forward to getting back to it. That's always a lot of fun.
Well,
seeing a huge amount of horse players out in Vegas at the same time is a big as fun as can be.
Exactly. I mean, it's Nick Tamaro the other day. I mean, it's like a convention. I was asking Nick when the news came. In fact, that was a week ago Friday when Keith Shamblin let it be known that the NHC was going to be postponed and run in August, and. Nick makes the connection. It's like a horse players convention. And when when we're not in the ballroom and you're just out, whether it's at night or you know, any other portion of the days, and you walk around the hotels and you see, you know, you just see other people that you know are playing, and or you might not see, you know, you might see them.
Yeah, and you can't. You got to qualify for it versus flying in. You know what I mean? It's fun. Absolutely.
Where do you live?
I live in Lexington. I've been here a little over 20 years. I'm a financial advisor in Lexington. So, on the side, I play the horses a little bit on the weekends. But, live locally here and go out to the green room quite a bit and support Churchill as well. And but Keeneland's my home track. Beautiful setting.
Well, and it's just nice, you know, that you, as Jim explained the other day, you know, the slight number. I mean, I don't know how he's limiting or how they're limiting the attendance, but you know, there's just a little bit, you know, a little bit of an opportunity. Were you going to be able to play on site for the BCBC?
You know, I have no idea on it. I obviously can do it on the computer if need be. I think Breeders' Cup's probably going to control that. I've kind of indicated that I'd be interested in coming, but I don't have any control over it. So, and I don't have one in there. But I do know that it's, you know, Keeneland's probably got 400 or 500 people out there right now, that everybody is very spread out, and masks, that sort of thing. You sit down at the table. I noticed the people with the box holders are able to sit in their boxes spread out. I'd say yesterday there was a couple hundred people that I saw, a few windows open, that sort of thing, but nothing to the public yet. Well, and I did go to Vegas a few weeks ago, and it is it's a different Vegas. Masks everywhere you go, which, you know, obviously big, but... even on the streets, in the casinos, when you're gambling, I don't think the NHC would be all that fun with what's going on. I think the delay on it's probably a great idea.
Yeah, it seems like the only, and there's nobody wants to play, you know, the NHC online. I mean, that part of it, having everybody together is as much a part of it as, you know, as the whole concept.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the last time I was out there for the NHC, they give you a room. So I had my room at Treasure Island, and then I got a room at Venetian or Palazzo just on my own with my buddies. And we went over, and my angle on that was on Thursday, I went and bet all my races all at once. And then Friday did the exact same thing. I think, I'm sorry, maybe it was Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
Friday and Saturday. So I had all my bets bet on Friday and finished with like $80. And then Saturday played all my bets, and I hit max odds on a horse. And that's when I jumped, and I had like 7 races left and was sitting around $180. And I was texting the guys over at TVG that were there, should I go and change these bets? I've got 7 long shots out there, and I'm at $180, and I think the winner was in like $190 at the time. And I let it ride. I don't think I hit maybe one other ticket for something. I wish I'd have went back and changed those wagers. But that's the one thing, walking away and watching them from afar instead of around there, it worked good until the last few races.
Who's in your circle of friends and cohorts when it comes to contest play or just, you know, your regular track going?
One of my best buddies, Dave Williams, he started the company called BetMix, and I do use his site a little bit as well. BetMix, he designed that thing, and it's been going, so that helped me get to the contest 4 or 5 years ago. Dave was there on Saturday as well with me, and then a buddy of mine, Don Yaden, who works for Central Bank, the three of us, actually Don wasn't out there on Saturday, but he runs and he loves the horses as well. But and then Mark McCain, another buddy of mine, that's an architect in town. The four of us pretty much sit at the same table together for years. All of us have a big passion for the horses, for sure.
I love it. Where'd you grow up, though?
Yeah. Originally, I'm from Madison, Wisconsin.
Born and raised
in Madison, and my dad was a veterinary sales rep and big accounts were in Lexington at Hager, Davidson, McGee. So we'd come down to Keeneland, and he started getting into some Indiana breds, and that's really and he always went to the Derby. And so after college, I worked in Milwaukee for a couple years, and then just winged it and decided to pick up and move down to Lexington. Got married, convinced my wife to move down here in 1998. Been down here ever since.
I didn't know
a person when I moved to town.
Well, and here you are, and you're the perfect. It's a perfect scenario. And for those that don't know Peter online at Twitter, best damn broker, and explain the Sherman as your tag.
Sherman is my pledge name when I was a Phi Sigma Kappa. So they called me when I was a pledge back in, when you can probably just getting done with the hazing in the early 90s. I was called Sherman, so I'd be Associate Sherman Emmering, Phi Sigma Kappa House Service, that sort of thing.
That's great.
People say that, I'll turn my head on it just because I remember it for 6 months. It's like basic training.
I love it. No, I'm a Colgate Deke, and so yeah, I can relate. I can relate to that. It's funny. I've seen it for a long time, and I always wondered to my. I said, "What? Why does Peter go by Sherman as the tag?"
No, I don't hide. I just set it up that way and haven't changed it.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Peter, congratulations! I know now I'm going to have Tommy on, and we'll let Tommy elaborate.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I appreciate it, Steve. Thank you for having me, and thanks for the phone call.
Not at all. Peter McFarland, everybody, best damn broker on Twitter, and a regular. You see his name on the leaderboards, and I remember when he did that, when he had a big first day, and I think
looking forward to the next one. Well, hopefully the BCBC. Honestly, that's the
and we'll talk more again because you're a rare quantity that seems to have mutual success, live money and mythical as well. So
I appreciate it, Steve. Call me anytime.
You got it. Peter McFarland, everybody. It's great.
Thanks,
I want to thank Peter and Phil Gleaves and, of course, earlier, Tim Hamm, Steve Asmussen, and, of course, paying tribute to Barry Abrams and Paul Pompa. We got more to do in coming days, but Ron Anderson and Richard Baltus and Anthony Quartarolo and Gary Siaka. Good luck today. I know we're off the turf on the East Coast, but you do have... The Born to Run still off the turf at Monmouth and the Fitz-Dixon at Presque Isle. So more recapping and more appreciation tomorrow. Thanks, everybody.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.